How good does it get, SK?
Why not us, Troy?
Today, live from the Pinecrest Inn, it's the Smiley Show. So long, everybody.
This is the Smiley Show.
Welcome back to another episode of the Smiley Show. And for those of you who are tuning in for a recap of the Charles Schwab Challenge, of the Colonial, just know that we are going to get to that at some point in time. As Smiley is traveling from the West Coast back to the East Coast, we think we're going to get maybe a little quick recap, 50 minutes on the Charles Schwab from an airport, maybe. We'll see how that comes about. You got some big things going on at Pebble this weekend. By the way, are you excited? Like, which course are we playing and how are we feeling about the game?
I'm playing Pebble Beach, and I think the tee time is like 6 a.m., which is a concern. I've been kind of going back and, you know, back and forth in my brain of what I'm going to hit off the first tee, because it's clearly a club, like, I would like to hit driver, but at 6 a.m., I just don't think, with a, you know, not knowing the breakfast ball situation, like, do we just hit 3-iron out there into the left rough and miss the green with an 8-iron? Like, I just, like, if you're playing this hole at 2 p.m. in the afternoon, it's a driver all day. It's a flip wedge. You're probably making birdie. So at 6 a.m., are we gonna start on the defensive? Or are we just gonna?
Well, hold on now, because don't you have to cut it? You gotta have to cut that if you're gonna hit driver. Are you worried about a left or right shot shape? Have you drawn it recently? No, you're not. Okay, all right. I can
get on top of it with the driver. Hit that cut. I'm a little bit more concerned about doing it with like a 4-iron.
Got it. Okay. All right. We're just coming off recording with Josh Gregory. We were just talking about this to close the episode. So I want to get a temp check on that.
My big thing is, I just jump to my front foot too fast sometimes when in the morning when I'm not moving quite as good, and I just get a little narrow. The face is, you know, wide open, right, and I'm having to do a little throw.
Well, this is perfect then, because if you get to the end of this episode and Smiley joins us from the airport, we're going to figure out what club he hit off the first tee at Pebble Beach at 6 a.m. We did this Walker Cup week. We got the first tee time off Pebble Beach, and I played with my brother David, my cousin Jamie McFarland, and our you know, mid-teens. Ford probably was 14 at the time. Ford Apple, who had never played Pebble Beach before in his entire life. So we're warming up in the dark, and Jamie and David and I are like, what tees you guys going to play? And David said, like, why don't we just play the plates? Like, why don't we play the U.S. Open plates? And Ford's like, what? He went out and shot an honest-to-God 87, first time seeing Pebble Beach from the plates. It was one of the most impressive things I've ever seen in my life in the game of golf. So, Ford Apple, if you're listening, shout out to you, buddy.
There you go. Good stuff.
First tee time Pebble's so great, though.
I'm going out there. It's interesting. I know you've been out there a ton, and you know that just whole where the pro shop, the putting green, and all that around there. Everything is like Pebble Beach owned, from what I understand. There's like no other brands that have their own stores, but like Ralph Lauren's opening up a store right there in that whole area. Which, from a, you know, the amount of traffic they get of people just, you know, walking around shopping at the pro shop, you know, visiting Pebble Beach. Why wouldn't you just do a little stop by? Like, hey, you know, I'll swing by Ralph Lauren and
they're going to have some cool co-branded stuff, you know, and I'd say I can't continue this episode without mentioning that it is the summer of cotton. So if you see any nice pique kind of classic,
well,
you
can
to
do
the
it
mix,
out there. Like that's
what I'm saying.
That's actually a place where you could commit to it.
Regardless. I'm committed in 95 degree heat, 95% humidity. I'm committed wherever. It is a summer of cotton, and we're living in it. We're sweating through it. So
we're gonna start calling you Lucas Glover here pretty soon.
I would love to get the cotton pants. I don't know how to source cotton pants or shorts quite yet. So like, reach out if you have a good way to. I'm still on. You know, I'm trying
just
to get
wear
away
your
from
rain
Big
pants,
Polly.
Man.
That someone commented on that at something I posted recently. I'm like, yeah, if you want to see me practicing from inside of an oven, I'll wear a cotton shirt and rain shorts. But
I was talking to Jackson about this the other day. It's we both start out in a full rain suit. Like, this is a summer video.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
And for every birdie that you make, you get to remove an item of clothing or something. But for every bogey you make, you have to add back an item from your rain suit. So it's a huge emphasis on getting hot early. But the more bogeys you add, like, you keep on adding, like, I got to put a toboggan on, you know?
Yeah. getting hot early as a double entendre in this case. I deeply fear that, like, you're going to finish the round in, like, your Ralph Lauren boxers and I'll be in a beekeeper suit. So, So but I love the idea.
If you're a hydration company, we got the concept for you.
please. A lot of this good fun way to start the episode, Smiley. We have some biz, some hashtag all caps B business to tend to here, because we've got
I'm still picturing this whole thing. Like, honestly, we could get sunscreen involved too, for like, if I play well, then it's like, hey, right. You know, then I'll full body sunscreen, but then I don't know if we'll be able to do it for you. You know, like, we'll spray you, but it'll just repel, like, you know, it's almost like a good ad for a rain gear, you know, that it's just shooting off, and we get a slow-mo of the sunscreen just completely repelling off. And we're selling concepts left and right here. Sorry, my brain's working.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. I love when we're workshopping this, because I feel like, actually, if I'm going to commit to the bit, it should just be like more cotton things. So I can put like on a terry cloth, like cotton robe, and like wrap a cotton bath towel, tuck it in, and just really just soak it. Moving around, like,
are we riding?
Swing.
Are we walking?
No, walking. Carry your own bags too.
Well, what a mess, man.
Oh, all right. I love it.
I think people have got to see this now.
Yeah, investors, possibly you. If you're out there and you want to sponsor, we're open for biz.
If you're a nurse, we might need a nurse on site.
Married to one. So how about that?
All right, perfect.
There, look at that. Amanda, guess what? You're signed up. You're now the on-staff nurse for the Smiley Show. Well, yes, to get to the matters of business, Smiley, of which there are many. I mean, because of the rough outline we put together for the beginning of this episode, it includes the reported 2027 schedule. We're going to show you a screenshot here in a second that Josh Carpenter of the Sports Business Journal put together. He's been on top of this thing since the beginning. We have that. We have what the 2028 schedule could potentially look like. Some of that comes from Josh Carpenter's reporting as well, the two different tracks, things like that. And then we have just more and more on LIV. I mean, I've seen just in the past few hours this morning, you know, time recording, this is Thursday of Colonial Week, but you know,
news stays hot.
The news stays hot. You know, we're seeing everything from rumors that players do want to invest, as suggested by some, and put their own money up in exchange for equity, which could be intriguing. We're also seeing reports that they're shuttering parts of their multimedia package. You know, that this $60 any shot, any time thing, they're going to shut down. So it's this interesting push and pull of where are we going to allocate resources to keep this thing alive, and what does it look like, which we continue to cover. But I think let's start with this, Smiley. I'm going to share this image to you that is via Josh Carpenter of the Sports Business Journal. And for everyone on YouTube, you can take a look at this, of what these are mostly confirmed, but the ones that are expected, I believe, is just whatever we're going to call this, the Torrey Pines event, the second event of the year in January. And also, it's been rumored there that as the Hawaii events have gone away, it will likely be Century. What do you think they're going to call that?
The Century Tournament. Or
the Century Torrey Tournament. Pies. Torrey Pines Classic, the Century. Yeah, let's. we're workshopping today, baby. The Torrey Pines Century Classic.
I remember when Charles Schwab came on for Colonial, and I'd received a sponsor's invite into the Colonial that week. And like, part of one of the things I had to do was try to guess what the name of the event was going to be the following year. You know, we're coming up with all these possibilities of, and none of them were close to the Charles Schwab Challenge, like, which is what it is. And, you know, we're throwing all these off the wall guesses that didn't hit.
This is a total tangent, but like, how do we arrive at, like, I know what an open is, right? Open insinuates there's open qualifying, right? Like, we know what a championship is, but like, we've got classic, we've got challenge. Like, do we need to get more names to refer to tournaments that aren't open qualifying or classified as a championship? I'd put that out.
Yeah, okay. So I think one of my suggestions was, it's like the competition at Colonial. You know, just just keep it, you know, very, very broad. Like, what is the competition? Could be anything. You know, it could be barbecue eating. Could be a golf event.
That's okay. So barbecue eating.
Could
so
be
now
a high dive
out
at the pool.
Remember the old pro-am name, the Bing Crosby Clam Bake. Yeah, that used to be the AT&T. Like mm-hmm. we need to start associating it with, like, you know, if it's a Texas event, it's like
the pig picking.
You know? Yeah, the Koneka cook-off. Yes, the Charles Schwab cook-off. Come on now. Give us a little pizzazz. We have plenty of challenges, classics, invitationals. Yeah. We need more tournament names.
Come out and watch these young men cook.
Why aren't we marketing executives? Why aren't we marketing executives? I mean, this is like the second or third episode in a row where we're coming up. I know what it was. We were the special temporary membership consultants for Jackson Coivin. We have a whole suite of consulting services that we can offer. So back to the 2027 PGA Tour schedule. All right, this is what strikes me here.
Can we come up with like our alternate list of what all of these events would be called if we had our choice?
Yeah. Okay. All right. So
I would start maybe at Valspar, the Painted by You Championship. You know.
I love that.
Yeah,
I love that. Or like the paint off, like the Valspar paint off. You know what I mean? Like, come up with something that's not championship.
Yeah. Like, okay.
You know, the Valspar paint off is a great one. Let's Valero. It should be like the Texas, like the oil drill, the Valero oil drill or something. You know, like we need some.
Okay,
really,
I like that.
You know what I'm saying? We need some really unique name of it, like just things that are very unique to that place and that setting. You know, the good old like, who wants to? Like, oh, you playing the oil drill this year? Like, heck yeah! I'll be at the oil drill. It's gonna be great.
What about the playoff at Picasso? That's of course Tampa Bay.
Wow,
that's Valspar.
That's Valspar. I love that.
What do you think about that?
I love that. That's nice. That's really nice. You could have a Picasso mascot going around with like a paint board, you know, taking pictures of kids.
Myrtle Beach, you know, it's sponsored by a jet company. How about just flying high? And everybody just shows up and that could mean anything. Like everybody, you know, thinks that you can get high at the tournament. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that to me, that one, that one has to have surf in the name. You know, like it's kind of like, you know, the surf off or something, or the, you know, I'm trying to think what a good, it's got to be something beachy. You know, it's you know, we're at Myrtle Beach, call it the landing strip, you know, Myrtle Beach. this is a safe space. We're spit on.
Okay. that killed me. Is Cognizant an eye company? Aren't they like visual? Or is that like my thinking of something different?
Cognizant, I think, is. That's a great
question. Is that like a logistics? I thought they were like something in eye care. No.
They're AI builders bridging the gap from AI to impact. Cognizant helps companies modernize technology, reimagine processes, transform experiences so they stay ahead in a fast-changing world.
Because if it was, I was going to suggest if it was like an eye company, it's like now you can see us, and instead it's just they just hire magicians to be on property. But it's an AI company, so I don't think magicians really.
What if they were magicians that were like doing tricks to bridge the gap from AI to impact? How about that?
I like magicians somewhere in here because we need magicians. Like magicians.
Yes.
Dude, have you seen this guy? All right, I know this is a tangent. Have you seen the bit of this guy who hires impersonators to come by his house? This guy will like hire like a Michael Jackson impersonator to come by his house to perform for like a party, except that there's no party, it's just him. It's like the Michael Jackson impersonator walks in and has to do his full bit just for this guy who's sitting there with the phone recording him. And then sometimes he'll hire multiple Michael Jackson impersonators and so they all show up at the same time and have to perform while the other's there. And it's okay, I know this is a magician thing, but it had me laugh and thinking.
No,
can you imagine? Like it's so awkward. You can't even, like, finish watching the whole thing. It's so stupid.
It's like, listen, buddy, you had a service, and I contracted you for that service. And I paid you. Perform. Like, that's how it goes out here.
Like the oil rig championship.
The oil drill. Yeah, the oil rig or the oil drill. I mean, I think that that one gets lost in the calendar a little bit. Like, if it's the oil drill, like, I'm not missing that one. That's on my calendar every single year as a player.
I think so, too. Drill. Yeah.
With like an old Houston Oilers style logo. Mm-hmm. You know, like, come on now, man. That's there's a lot. There's a lot here that we could really.
So you're saying bring back the clam bake for Pebble.
Bring back the clam bake. The oil drill. Something surfy for Myrtle Beach and or the landing strip.
I was going to say cliff jumping or cliff diving for Torrey Pines. Not to like, we don't want anybody doing that, but you know, people are doing it all the time, and they, you know, the new logo is the parachute, right?
I thought it was balloons out there. Isn't it hot air balloons?
No, they're always jumping off with the parasailing. I think paraglider. That's what it is.
The parasail.
Yeah. Just
paraglider.
Keep it there.
Just call it that. Yeah. The paraglide at Torrey Pines presented by Century.
And Amex, you know, it's at Palm Springs. Maybe we just call them it like the 401k.
That's okay. No, this. You do this to me all the time. We're like, we're transitioning, you slip it in, and I almost miss it. But for the 401k, pretty good. Here's what I was going to suggest there, right? Is like, it's always a low scoring there, right? So what do we call it? We've called it the shootout in the desert, presented by American Express.
The shootout? No, because I think that's what we called it already. Like, these are.
It's gonna get weirder.
Yeah, like the 401k. I think we're in the good spot there.
Well, okay, isn't that where the Coachella is? We should call it like the festival, like the, you know, the golf Coachella or something. Golfchella.
Okay. Presented by 401k.
Presented by. Okay. We're pulling from a lot of different buckets here creatively, which I like.
Is there anything that kind of goes with like luxury? Because like you can kind of maybe do that with Cadillac, like the
Cadillac or Genesis, right?
Yeah,
you know, yeah. The man, I'm just thinking of like just leather interior. I can't get past the leather interior.
I'm also thinking about like my kids name. In the backseat screaming and like how can we work that in to the
toddler iPad presented by Cadillac,
or I'm a backseat championship. Presented by Cadillac.
I don't know that we're going to be able to call your kids backseat in this episode.
I called myself. I said, I'm the backseat.
Okay.
Championship.
Okay. All right.
I love that you're marking down.
And a no marked for Jackson. So he's aware of that whenever we get there. I think we have a lot of good here. I think that's about as much event renaming we can do on one show. But please, if you're looking at this list right now, before we actually start discussing it, and you have a renaming idea, we'd love to hear it in the comments. All right, we need to get the section popping off. We need to rename every one of these events, and there are no bad suggestions. Safe space. We're just spitballing here. We need a mood board for each event, and you're going to help us with it. So
I just texted Jax. I said we're off the rails, and I can't wait for him to listen to this.
Oh, Lord, is the response. And yes, yes, Jackson, you're only scratching the surface.
All right, so all right, we have the schedule. You want to talk about it?
Oh, I love doing this show. I truly love doing this show. All right, no Hawaii. Right. That's obviously the headline. And then, I mean, the AT&T and the WM have flipped back and forth in the previous few years off and on. So I don't that kind of flip back doesn't bother me a ton. I wonder why that we had the fragmented Florida swing with the Cadillac being introduced to a new event. And then they moved Cadillac behind Cognizant, which makes sense geographically, you know, going from Palm Beach to Miami. But like, would it have made more sense to you to have put the Valspar after the API and just had a 5-event Florida swing?
Well, it gets in the way of, you know, the players. Like, I think the PGA Tour is going to always try to protect that championship the most in this. Like, they want their guys to be, you know, the easiest schedule for them to to potentially be ready for the players. So having the Cadillac right before that, like they're not going to have players be the third week in a row of a potential signature event. So Valspar in the schedule this past year, like why it worked for them is that they were after API players, then Valspar. So they were able to get guys, you know, playing their third week in a row where many players weren't playing Cognizant. So now you throw in, it goes Cognizant, you know, Cadillac, it goes to the players, and then Arnold Palmer. Valspar doesn't want to be behind that. They're like, no, we want to have a better date than that. Yeah. Like, because nobody's going to play the Valspar. They were able to get a pretty good field this past year because it's the third week in a row for a lot of guys, and they like playing there. So like, we would rather be in an entirely different spot in the schedule. Mm-hmm. We don't want Cognizant State. It's obviously the worst date in this entire stretch for trying to get anybody to play, because you're going to expect that all these guys who are qualified to play Cadillac players, API, like they're not going to play. They won't play Cognizant and they won't play Houston. It's just,
well, so that's like Houston gets kind of hosed there too. And I wonder, like, let's
the only
about,
thing they have going for them is that a lot of guys like that as a decent spot to get ready for the Masters. So you could still grab some guys that might feel like that's still a good last prep for them. And honestly, it's coming off of that stretch where you're playing, you know, the four to swing, when you go, you know, Miami, you go players and API, like that's some pretty dang difficult golf, right?
And that's always been the gripe of the Florida swing, right? Is like PGA National is hard. So previous iterations, like PGA National, hard. Bay Hill, hard. Sawgrass, hard. Innisbrook, hard. You know, so it's like you can't play all those in a row. And then it's like, hey, you know what would make this even harder? What do we put through the Blue Monster in there? So mm-hmm. I don't know that it definitely doesn't help Cognizant being followed by another difficult Florida course. And I can definitely see what you're saying on the Valero Texas Open. I mean, I'm sorry, on the Valspar, I'm not wanting to follow the API there. I mean, I wonder if you have a guy like Scottie Scheffler, who was the runner-up at the Cadillac Championship this year to Cam Young, and then as obviously, you know, as won a Players Championship, multiple, I believe, as won the Arnold Palmer Invitational, multiple, like, but he's going to go to Texas and play the Houston Open. There are no, you know, which tournament does he end up taking off? I don't know that. I guess I'm just kind of, I'm stream of consciousness here, but I'm trying to game out how the schedule planning looks for a lot of these guys.
You'll see some guys still play that Houston Open just as that last, you know, time you touch it, because some guys don't like to take 2 weeks off before a major. They're like, you know what, I'm just going to play 4 weeks in a row. I'm going to have to deal with it. Some guys hate doing it, but it's kind of the schedule at hand. Or you might see some guys maybe add Valero this year, although it's maybe not the best version of a test before you go to Augusta. What I really notice about this schedule, you know, we talked a lot about the first half of this in Florida and Texas, but the issue that we've had this year with the two Texas events, yes, it's convenient that you can go from Byron to Colonial. I think a lot of guys love to just be able to hop in a car and go from one to the next. But as you see in the schedule next year, Byron has been pushed up to late April, early May, which is the date in which that Cadillac Championship was this year. I think the golf course potentially will be better.
Less rain?
You never know in Texas. Like, you can have, you know, fronts come through at any, you know, portion of the spring to really, you know, make a golf course play extremely wet. So you never really know. You would expect to have wind, you know, still in late April. You know, the later in May you get, the less wind you might have. So that's obviously a plus. But one of the huge issues is that where these two events in Byron Nelson and Colonial stack up on this schedule that is so condensed, and when then they go to Memorial, RBC Canadian, and then the US Open, that at some point, you know, coming off of a major championship at the PGA and also the Quail Hollow and RBC, like, where, like, how is Scottie Scheffler and Jordan Spieth, the two biggest draws in Texas, supposed to play six events in a row? Scottie Scheffler and Jordan Spieth not being in Colonial this week should be a crime. Like, that is an event that neither one of those two want to miss. They love playing in Texas. They get so much support, and they got to pick one or the other because mm-hmm. they know the value of playing Memorial and being rested for the U.S. Open. It's obviously mm-hmm. solved next year, as you see the Colonial date isn't announced quite yet, but you see those two events are separated, which I think helps those the Texas guys at least and just the events in general be able to market their stars that they expect to get to play in them.
Yeah, you expect Colonial to land after the PGA Championship as it has in previous years. But it's so interesting, and I think, you know, I don't want to get off this right yet, but I do think as we kind of start moving forward to the 2028 PGA Tour schedule, and we talk about the two tracks that Brian Rolapp's laid out, the 120 player, you know, first track, A track, Platinum Tour, whatever we want to call it, and the 140 player event, second track, that I wonder how much spacing we end up getting between events, whether it's on either side of majors or even how the promotion relegation works between those two tracks, because it just feels like that there are events here. I'd say it this way. If I'm a Cognizant I don't want to keep picking on Cognizant. I want to support Cognizant. It's a historic venue. It's at a place that, you know, I love spending time down Palm Beach, but they're kind of getting hosed on fields. I'd almost rather say if we're going to be a track two event, or, you know, if we're going to be stuck here, like just move us to track two where we can get a full field there.
We're already in a track one. You know? We're already in a track one, track two system. And the only thing that we're missing are just more events opposite of a track one event mm-hmm. is all we're missing. Yeah, really, that's all it comes down to. It, and I think we're eventually going to get into the full discussion of all of this. But before we get off of this schedule, the only thing I want to add, so with Valspar being moved to early May, I think some of my biggest concerns about that date for that championship is that, you know, overseeding, especially for these Florida golf courses, typically happen at the beginning of the year, you know, probably late fall, and you have it all the way through probably April or so, and then it dies off. So they're going to have to make a decision mm-hmm. at the beginning of the year of, are we overseeding this golf course or not? Because I think it's going to take longer for that golf course to come back. I remember seeing a picture, somebody posting from what's the golf course? The Copperhead Innisbrook Golf Course, where it just was like, man, this just does not look good at all. So it's not going to look green on TV. So it's not going to visually look as appealing. And then you wonder, like, if they just keep it Bermuda for that May mm-hmm. event, you know, what happens to the integrity of the golf tournament? I think it could be great, but if, you know, it at a place where they've probably struggled with agronomy more so than any of the other Florida golf courses, quite as much as this one, I'd be worried about the playing conditions. Mm-hmm. Not to say that they're going to be bad, but it mm-hmm. won't be up to the just standard different. of having some thicker rough. Like, you know, they would have four inch rough at this golf course in the past to really, you know, have an emphasis on driving the golf ball and finding fairways, which is kind of the point of this event. So I am not in love with this event being in May. Mm-hmm. I understand it from their viewpoint that they would like to be able to get better players in their field. Now where they're going to be, you know, situated, it could be a spot for them where they're the beginning of a stretch of golf for players to say, I'm going to play Valspar, I'm going to play Quail Hollow and Truist, and then I'm going to play the PGA Championship. So from that standpoint, they're getting the field, but what are you sacrificing in doing so? I can understand it. I'm just not in love with it like I am with them being in March where it's overseeded mm-hmm. and you get maybe a little bit cooler weather, a little windier, where in May it's going to be warmer and maybe not as much wind. I'm not a Tampa Bay expert, but that's just my general thoughts and feelings on potentially how that event could play out.
Well, it'll be interesting. If you don't oversee, we're talking about Bermuda pretty much everywhere, I'd imagine, right? So we're talking about, and you'd expect with the Florida heat ramping up that stuff should grow in pretty nicely if it's not competing with whatever they're overseeding with, whether that's, you know, rye or you know,
I don't think they should overseed, but I'm not a grass expert.
Yeah. But I'll also think about the characteristics of that course and, you know, just sort of tight landing areas and wondering and expecting it to play pretty firm there, like where all of a sudden
it would play firm. Yeah.
Like, it could some, be like roll like, out on tee shots. It could get really tough, you'd assume, right? Like, I think it'll still be tougher.
I still would play harder. I think it just might play like kind of weird and dumb in spots, if that makes sense. Where guys are just like, what kind of bounce is that? You know, where you're just getting these ridiculously firm bounces, and which is fine. It just, I think there's almost a little bit more control when you have that grass being a little greener.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, if I'm looking back at, you know what side of this I stand on after Bay Hill last year? Like, I like sicko Bermuda test. I like crispy, firm Bermuda test. So maybe I'm in on May Chaos at the Valspar. So let's turn the page to the 2028 schedule. And this is something that's been out there reported for a while now. A lot of different Sports Business Journal, amongst others, contributed to the reports that it's sort of crystallizing statements that Brian Rolapp has made and setting the table for what it could look like. So here's just a breakdown of everything we know thus far. So there are major changes planned for 28. There was a meeting at the Truist where the tour presented players with the concept of a plan that would include two tiers or tracks, right? Under the plan presented to those players, track one would include 23 elevated tournaments. Those consist of 16 regular season PGA Tour events, 3 FedEx Cup playoff events, and 4 majors. The regular season tournaments in track one will be expected to have 120-man fields, and track one's also expected to include at least 3 new markets. Some of those markets that are under consideration for new track one events include Boston, Philadelphia, Denver, Nashville, San Francisco. A lot of people wondering why Chicago's not on that list. Maybe they already consider Chicago a market in use for both the President's Cup and the BMW Championship. So not necessarily ruling it out, but just saying it's not considered new by defined by the standards Rolapp's looking at. So Sports Business Journal previously reported additional interest from the tour in the Seattle market, Sahali, I can never say it right, but they hosted the 1998 PGA Championship, a very narrow venue a lot of people really loved. Multiple people said the tour has been seeking as much as $30 million annually for potential title sponsors for new events.
Bizarre.
What's that? Yeah.
Bizarre. Yeah. Anything, with the Live, you would think it would almost be a pullback, but it's the opposite. They're going to be charging more.
Apparently that is what they got for the Cadillac Championship. Sports Business Journal has reported that they were seeking that or got that for that event. So track two of this proposed structure includes 20 tournaments, and those have 140-man fields. And not immediately clear what the cadence of those track two tournaments would be. Also unclear what the downstream effects would be on the Korn Ferry Tour and the PGA Tour Americas. All this is not finalized. None of this, it's all subject to change. And there is a meeting planned the week after the U.S. Open at the Travelers with another update. I believe, if I had this correct, that when Brian Rolapp addressed the media, I was there sitting there for that address at Ponte Vedra, that there will also be a media update that week at the Travelers with more info on this. So, also last week there was some meetings with Byron Nelson. We've had some reporting come out of that, but nothing necessarily tangible that changes what we know for 2028. So a lot of information there. I think the best place to start, Smiley, is that we have talked on the show really since its inception about the idea of doing better stratification or identification of the Platinum Tour and whatever the regular rank and file tour is. That feels like the track system to me, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sitting here just doing a little bit of counting, trying to figure out the 20 events in track two and how that would be any different than what we're experiencing now in the PGA Tour, and honestly just doing the basic math, if they're excluding the fall schedule in this, it adds up to be about the exact same thing we've been working with for the most part. So I don't know if there'd be a little crossover on some of these weeks that might have a track two or track of one event, but I think what we're doing is just, there is a distinction now in that in this marketplace, when the PGA Tour goes to these sponsors, they're basically showing and guaranteeing what they're going to be buying and purchasing. Where in this current market that we have right now for the PGA Tour, you are going to a Charles Schwab. You know, Colonial has always traditionally gotten great fields, but now it's based off the date. you know, mm-hmm. and where it lies. Mm-hmm. Like you don't have Scottie Scheffler and Jordan Spieth playing at the Charles Schwab this year. And it's going to those types of sponsors and say, hey, this is what you're paying for. These are the type of players that you are going to expect to be playing in your event. And it may deter some sponsors to want to be a track two event. It may not affect sponsors at all. You know, some people just want to be affiliated with the PGA Tour and the market and the reach that they get from the event and what it does just for the general community. So with that, all that being said, Charlie, I'm looking at all this and I guess really the big takeaway is that with 23 potentially track one events, 16, you know, that number's coming up, right? So we're typically dealing with around how many events do you think on the PGA Tour with signature events? Is it around like excluding the majors?
Signatures only.
Yes. Yeah.
I believe it was 8 or 9. I mean,
that's what I had in my head. I just wanted to make sure. So we're basically doubling that up. And so in the only world in which this works is that there will be a track one event and a track two event happening at the same time, mm-hmm. Maybe 8 times a year. And what I like about this is that it's giving more players opportunity to play
eight events. This double check.
Yeah. So yeah. It's giving more players. So 120 players versus 70, or whatever the silly number is that we've seen in signature events. So now you're getting more players that are playing in these big signature events with potential of promotion relegation is what we hope. And I like that there's 140 players playing in track two, which is it's a big number. And mm-hmm. I think it's a fair and safe number to get players around and make sure at the beginning of the part of the year that you can get cuts to where guys are finishing. So you got 260 players. That's a pretty big number that are affiliated under the PGA Tour model. Now, the question that you and I had talked about earlier about this is that track two, you know, the 140 players, is that Korn Ferry or is that PGA Tour still? And will players that come off the Korn Ferry to get their card, where will they be, you know, the number one player off the Korn Ferry? Mm-hmm. Will they just go straight to track one? You know, how will they be able to, you know, not make the Korn Ferry Tour feel like it's two steps away from the PGA Tour? So that's like the most interesting part from my standpoint is how they navigate this track two, because it's not terribly different than what we're dealing with now. Mm-hmm. It's just that you're adding more signature events that might take eyeballs away from a track two event if they happen to be played on the same week.
Well, I think, and I was also, if this is some of the stuff that you stated here, like please jump in here, but I was also just doing some schedule comparisons while you were talking, and this is blind speculation, right, based on what we think it could be, and it probably will look a lot different once Rollapp rolls out the full plan. But if we're talking about 16 events that are not accessible to the full tour, that they're whatever signature event, whatever we're going to call it, and then you're looking at the 20 track two events. So if we're assuming that those are always going to have opposite field events against them, like that every week's going to have two events, right? Then that leaves 4 additional events beyond the 16 track one events that are, you know, unspoken, unallocated in terms of schedule, not locked in for track two. And we've also heard the possibility that the tour could take weeks off before or after majors. So there's your 4 there. So I'm wondering if you start to read the tea leaves, if what we're looking at is that this track two is effectively a plussed up version of the Korn Ferry Tour,
mm-hmm.
which that's going to be interesting from a business perspective. And then we get that break where there are 4 these featured track two events. It's the only show in town during these set weeks when they're taking a break before or after a major. You know, that's just sort of a guess, but one that's hopefully a little bit educated by what we've heard.
Yeah, totally. And I think if you do the math too, 20 events isn't enough for 140 guys. Like they would rather have, you know, closer to, you know, 25 to 30 events that they can mm-hmm. go and play. So, you know, they're playing for a little bit less money, but they need more than 20. So in my mind, I'm guessing that those 20 tournaments are from the beginning of the year all the way, you know, through the play, mm-hmm. or, you know, before the playoffs. And then the fall is reserved for, you know, everybody goes and dukes it out from, whether you have new guys from the Corn Ferry Tour, they get their feet wet, which I've always thought that these guys who get their cards on the Corn Ferry Tour should be playing in the fall. Now, I know that it's been a, the fall has been designed for eligibility and what you're playing for the following year. So it just keeps on shuffling at the end of the year. Now, that would give you a potential 7 more events. So it kind of then fills out a full schedule for the track two guys. Now they get to play a full schedule, which I think you could argue that the biggest issue for the track two players in this current model that we have now is that it's so hit or miss. Like they may get to 20 events, but it's gotten better since they've kind of cut down on the amount of cards given to where they're kind of guaranteed more guys getting into events. But I think this is getting to a model that's better for the player, more opportunities, and hey, it's, you can play your way off of that top tour. And I think that will be the interest of many more storylines that happen.
Yes.
Going from 70 to 120, you know, just look at Aaron Rye. Not to say that he's a guy that's lived in the 100 to 120. It's not true at all. But he's also hasn't been a player that's really made it to the tour championship a whole lot. So there's plenty of storylines that will continue to follow here, but I like players having more opportunities to play. And I think in this, where we've been lost as from my standpoint is that the distinction hasn't been there in the market for these sponsors. The concern about the persons and what they were going to do, but it seems that there's possibilities now that they could go up to $30 million for this. That's huge for any player that makes it to those events. But if they can secure a potential for a 20 to 27 weeks for other track two PGA Tour players that are playing for $3 to $8 million, you can make a good living playing on that tour as well. Even if you stayed on that tour for 10 years, it's not too different than what it was 15 to 16, 17 years ago.
Yeah, it's a big bet on just growth of the sport in general. And I think that is, you know, what we've talked about the entire time with Rolap's arrival is like his set of skills at the NFL are just game growth and product growth. And so if there is room and interested investors that are going to inject this thing with capital, you could have this sort of elite tour. The guys are making lots of money, but track two could be a great, great living. And I think we would watch it.
People want more golf, right? And they want to see these guys go have peaks and valleys in their career, and they want to see them climb back up. Like, that's kind of the beauty of Premier League, right? Like, you see
100%.
The teams that drop down, they get back up, and they're, I actually follow the Tottenham story pretty close this year because
I was sweating. Can you imagine
a player drop down that we've, you know, seen be exempt into all of these top events for years and years and years, and all of a sudden they might be playing on the track two circuit, and there's not going to be sponsors invites to crutch and help them out through all this. I think it's really intriguing.
Yeah, buddy, I was all the way in on watching Tottenham in the championship next year. We survived. So thank goodness for that. We're all happy about
congratulations.
That.
But, congratulations. Hey, thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for congratulating me on that. I think it's interesting too. And I just did some quick math on that. There were 31 playing weeks this season.
Okay.
So that's interesting too, like to go down to 23. Now you're shrinking one of those already. We didn't have the century this year. So really it's going forward, you're at 30 effective potential playing weeks for the 2028 season. So there are going to be some gaps in the schedule.
And crossover.
Obviously I don't think they're really including these or outlining fall events in the announcement of these two tracks, because I still think the fall is a major question mark. I mean, there is, and this starts to kind of bleed into our discussion with Liv, one of the things Brian Rolap talked about is at that player's address was the trying to go internationally more, you know, and trying to kind of maybe find some, you know, really strengthening that partnership with the DP World Tour and maybe making more of those events co-sanctioned. He didn't say anything about that specifically, but he alluded to going abroad more often and playing
that
a global game.
That would help the track two guys.
It
would help the DP World Tour fields. It would give guys more opportunities to play in other places. And you and I spoke about this earlier, and I didn't know if it sounded stupid, but we have to talk about it. Yeah. What if the PGA Tour now purchase Live and those 10 international events. And I don't know what that would look like, but I do like the idea of the PGA Tour going to a place to where, okay, Live runs all these events. Now, what can they provide? Well, they have players that they can send and play. Now, it may totally ruin their team model in this, which I don't think Liv is going to let go of, because that seems to be something that they think is going to be the revenue driver for their league and its future. So maybe it doesn't make any sense. But what does make sense is, and you just kind of talked about it, is if the PGA Tour strengthen their relationships with the DP World or with these National Open events, all of a sudden you get all these PGA Tour players going and playing in those. Now they might not be the Track One guys, but you might get some guys that might go play.
That's right.
But I think another discussion we need to have is how it was rumored that Track One guys will be strongly discouraged from playing in Track Two events. And I just want to get your thoughts on that, because that all of a sudden feels against what the PGA Tour policy is on. You can't really tell us what we can and can't play in, right? That's not in our bylaws.
And I think this is where it's going to get very interesting to see how the schedule itself is composed of how many, like, you know, what I just said a couple of minutes ago, like if in one iteration, we're assuming that all 16 of the Track One events match up exactly with the Track Two event, and there are four extra Track Two events left out there. That's certainly one possibility, but there could be other possibilities where there are weeks where Track One guys aren't playing and they could go play in a Track Two event because it has a hometown tie. You know, let's just say that, you know, one of these Texas events was on a week where there wasn't a Track One event, and they really want to have Scottie Scheffler come play, and the PGA Tour is saying, hey, we really prefer you to leave that opportunity for the guys that are trying to earn promotion through Track Two. I think, look, there are going to be, you know, pain points, pressure points around the change to this system, like there is with anything. But I do think that this creates better definition as to what the PGA Tour is and what the pathways are to playing their way on it. And it gets away from the things that we disliked, these, you know, 70, 80 player, no cut, limited field events, like back to 120 with cuts, and then a larger 140 man field where you can play your way in. Like I do kind of like the idea of, like, I think there are times where even we're talking about the FedEx Cup fall, where guys in these last few years had to continue playing to stay one top 125 and now top 100 to retain their card. But there are guys showing up and playing who were, you know, top 50 or made it to East Lake. They're already good next year. Like, yeah. I didn't love that they're taking spots away from guys who, now I understand from an event perspective, selling against it, you know, you want to have the biggest and best field you could possibly have, but I can understand wanting a little bit of a separation between, you know, Track One and Track Two, simply to make sure the system works the way that it is intended to enable playing opportunities for these guys who are trying to kind of work their way into Track One.
So another thought here is that with Track Two, and potentially, you know, where and when that would air. I think we're all very familiar how Track One works with network coverage, taking it on the weekend, on Saturday and Sunday. So let's talk about what potentially could happen if you have these crossovers between these Track One and Track Two events. So I think a fear that you would have is that you would split your audience. Now, it wouldn't be a 50-50 split, but even if you take viewers away from your premier product, that doesn't seem like a good business model for the PGA Tour, who relies heavily on good ratings. And would you be a person that would flip it on, name the event on Golf Channel to watch an X event that's more interesting, that has a better enticing leaderboard, or a golf course you like, or you know somebody who's in the field, you want to watch them, versus a Cam Young 7-shot lead runaway at Doral that's happening on? It's like, I kind of like sports that are close, so I'm going to go flip it on there. The other thing I want to mention too is that, you know, Brian Rolapp, coming from the NFL and being a person who dealt with all these different networks and really expanded the NFL's reach, going to many different streaming services like Netflix and Amazon, and of course, like the Peacocks of the world of and CBS, I'm sure, with Paramount, has gotten involved in that whole streaming universe with the NFL. But now when you think about Brian Rollup on what he potentially could do for the PGA Tour, on that note, this screams to me that these Track 2 events could potentially have an Amazon or Netflix come in and sponsor these events to continue to grow the reach, overall reach of the PGA Tour. So that's something that interests me. But are you splitting your audience a little bit, trying to draw away from your premier products? That would be the one question I would have there.
I think you're dead on. And I think that a lot of this is going to be sort of a trial balloon. It's like, you know, the reality of the world we live in is that it used to be that ESPN was this behemoth that, you know, printed money through local rights, you know, carriage fees. And then as the linear television model changed and shifted and evolved, that's not the case anymore. And the competitors that are entering the space, like the Amazons and Netflix, have much deeper pockets, right? And so I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, Brian Rollup went back to an executive he has a great relationship with from his days at the NFL and said, hey, what do you think about taking, you know, some of the, it's behind the Prime paywall, whatever, you have to have a subscription, but let's just see what it's like to produce golf on this platform and see what we like and we don't like. And then guess what? Next time there's a rights deal that's up, you know, there are multiple competitors for, which I think that's where I'd probably get to if I'm trying to think about it from a business perspective without the level of expertise and information and experience that a Brian Rollup has. But if you're sacrificing some marginal short-term audience of, hey, you know, Cam Young 7 shots up at the Cadillac, I'm going to go flip over to the opposite field. I'm going to flip over to the Track 2 event on Amazon, watch that. Okay, maybe you get a small percentage of the audience that you're losing there, but the long-term gain is having more people at the table that are competing for that rights fee so you can sell against it at a greater number. And I think that's really the game right now. It's like none of this stuff is sustainable unless you can continue generating money against it to return the investment the SSG's made to make the $30 million asks of these tournament, you know, organizers make sense, right? Like going at, and even we're looking at, you know, some of the TV deals that are looking like they're going to be up, and the way that, you know, they've been looking at production costs and how they're supported by, you know, PGA Tour trucks on site. Like there's just a whole world there that's shifting and evolving so fast that creating more demand for desire to you know, own the rights to a PGA Tour telecast, I think is a smart move by Brian Rollup.
Yeah, you know, ESPN's so heavily involved in Thursday, Friday, you know, before the Golf Channel coverage will come on in the afternoon. You know, can you picture a Netflix or Amazon taking it from a ESPN of their Saturday, Sunday morning coverage and having them be the feature, you know, coverage similar to a network coverage on a weekend. So it's, I think if you're thinking about it from that standpoint and talking about creating, you know, higher rights fees for the PGA Tour, that's a good business. And right now, the more players that you can get into it, the better. All of, you know, the Netflixes and the Amazons are continuing to expand their reach, into live sports. You've seen them do it with the boxing. You've seen them do it with the NFL. You've seen
Amazon at golf. Masters.
Yeah. So it's, I think you'll see some talks about it happening at some point, like Netflix's involvement, of course, with Full Swing. Of course, it was considered to be very wildly successful at the beginning and getting that Netflix golf audience to potentially their PGA Tour golf market is interesting. So I think all good things. The thing I take away is, I think that it's great for potentially the membership that, and I'm hoping that I'm looking at it through the right lens of that 20 tournaments would be before the fall and that it would go to 27 because I don't think 20 is enough, but depends on what those numbers are for the purses. If they're playing for $5 to $7 million, like that's a good way to make a living. But the only other thing that we'll mention is that it really, really makes it challenging for coaches who coach guys on both different sides. We've talked to Josh Gregory about this, and he's guys that had, you know, like, what do you invest in the guys that ultimately pay you more, or do you, you know, just tell your guys that, hey, I'll try to make one when I can? Like, who can travel every week just go see their, you know, guys on both tours? It's so much better when you have 10 guys at the same place versus 5 and 5. And so now I think you'll start to see players on that track too have to become more self-reliant on their on how they get yeah. better, because they don't have their whole network of guys that potentially could be there. So that's another thing that's kind of, it's not like terribly important for us to kind of talk about. Mm-hmm. It's more so the players to deal with, but it's just another issue that's kind of being created through all this.
Better have a good PJ deal to get back and forth from all these places. I mean, I think, and I feels like we're close to wrapping here, but I think there are a couple things that I just wanted to, that you mentioned that are worth kind of putting a bow on. One is on the back to the broadcast rights partners. It's like, I think those conversations are going to be very interesting, because if you have an Amazon that comes in and says, hey, look, we did this successfully at the Masters. It went off without a hitch. We could do this early PGA Tour live window. Then you're sort of nudging ESPN to say, hey, what else can you offer? And we saw the experiment earlier this year at the Farmers Insurance Open, Brooks Koepka's Return to Live. Hey, big ticket event. We're going to put it on linear television. Like, if you could start working back and forth saying, well, what are you going to give me? What are you going to give me? And all of a sudden we have, instead of having a subscription to PGA Tour Live or, you know, ESPN Plus that PGA Tour Live, it's like we can flip on ESPN or ESPN2 and get morning window coverage before they pass it off to Golf Channel. Like, that's an interesting value add for the PGA Tour. You know, what else totally. Can you come with Amazon? So I think that there are a ton of permutations there that could really, again, to get back to what Rolapp's main drive is going to be, enhance the product. And I think the other two is you mentioned buying Live, and I think it's worth just detailing why that could be an intriguing one, because at one point in time, there was this potential deal on the table where the tour was going to assume control of Live. The PIF was going to get some sort of equity in the PGA Tour Enterprise to set up.
That's changed.
But it was you know, Jay Monahan was going to oversee Live, and they were going to do away with team golf. And
they weren't.
You know, Live did not want to do away with team golf, and Live did not agree with the valuation that the SSG and the PGA Tour Enterprise has put on their league. And so I think even if you were now to go to, because the PIF, despite pulling funding, still have an ownership stake in Live. So if the tour were to go to them, I would assume there'd still be some level of hardball being played and just deciding how much, you know, and then if Live gets to a point where they're filing for bankruptcy, what type of bankruptcy are they filing for? And what does that mean for PIF's ownership stake in that league? So it's, and we've had a lot of smart commenters chime in on, you know, the minutia of bankruptcy and things like that. But I guess it's, I just wanted to run through those things before we got off, because there's so much minutia to all this stuff. It is a rapidly changing business and product world. And I know that we're here because we love golf. We love talking about it, but we're talking about how we're going to consume the game at the pro level going forward. So it's important stuff to detail.
100%. And it's been going on for the last 5 years of how the PGA Tour is going to take reshape of what the future might look like. And I think we're starting to see finally over the top of the hill what it could look like. And I don't mind the view. I think the players are going to eventually like it. It might take some time for them to really understand it, to see, you know, you got to go through a full year to really understand if you like it or don't like it. But from just looking at the numbers and potentially the amount of players that could potentially play, and not limiting it to too tight where it feels like a WGC, I think are all good things. Now, what will happen with the PGA Tour's relationship with the DP World Tour and potentially getting more PGA Tour players playing over there? And ultimately what happens with Liv heading into 2027 will remain something we talk about.
Yeah. I can't believe that that's how we concluded this section of the episode that began with us renaming the Valero Texas Open the Oil Drill. So I hope let's you enjoyed that run.
Let's fly high out of here, buddy.
That's a good segue, because we're going to fly on over to Smiley in the airport, recapping the Charles Schwab Challenge. So we'll enjoy that, close of the episode. And then on Wednesday, Josh Gregory dropping. That's going to be a good one. Like, you want to do some swing nerd stuff, you want to yet again have some stuff to work on with your short game, do not miss Josh Gregory on Wednesday.
We'll see you next week on the Golf Channel. This has been The Smiley Show.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our first lovely time. Fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe. you guys have some good takes. So I'm happy to come on and shoot the